Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, it's just the crew in studio today. I know you guys like those solo shows, and I'll walk you through the whole Kobe Memorial thing. I attended it on Friday's Lakers game. I took some footage and sound and vision of that as well. So a lot of thoughts on that. That's coming up. First, I'll tell you about Zorro, Zorro.com. If you purchase supplies for your small business or mid-sized business, you go with Zorro, Zorro.com. It's your go-to resource, tools, safety equipment, office, shipping, cleaning, automotive supplies, including specialty items you can't find anywhere else. Brands you know and trust, like Stanley, 3M, Prestone, Black & Decker, Schneider Electric, Rubbermaids, all the good stuff. It's all there, and it's all at super competitive prices. Fast, free shipping on $50 or more. U.S.-based customer service, so they don't outsource. You get to talk to a good old U.S. of A or when you need to speak to somebody. Visit Zorro.com/Adam. Sign up for the Z-mail and get the 15% off your first order. That's the Z-mail. Sign it up and get 15% off your first order. That's Zorro.com/Adam.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is The Adam Carolla Show. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, as of this recording, it's entirely possible that he's the winner of the Iowa caucus, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on your mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
Knock, knock. The early birds are here.
Somebody sent me, two things. Ernest T. Bigot.
He's just asking.
I don't know why. Someone said, shouldn't it be Ernest Lee Bigot? And I was like Ernest Lee asking.
Oh, yeah, Ernest Lee Bigot.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
That's not bad. I don't know. T sounds better, but Ernest Lee is more correct. So I have a food, a candy-oriented Ernest Lee Bigot.
Do tell.
Coming because somebody.
What up, my nougat?
Somebody, nobody to get that drop.
Somebody, based on a tweet.
Gone to the wind.
Based on a
lost
tweet
to history.
That somebody sent me. And I didn't really work it out completely. I worked half of it out. But anyway, I'll get into it for a second. I was reminding me of a joke I told last night. So I was driving out to the Laugh Factory last night. And I thought to myself, it's Super Bowl. The Super Bowl was last weekend. And then it would seem weird to go out there and not mention something about the Super Bowl or something in that yeah. era, that genre.
You become the person Brian hates. Right. Oh, is there a game?
Right. I was thinking more and more about those people and I hate them. All right. So it's not that they have those thoughts. Mm-hmm. I don't have my thoughts on your thoughts. Yes. It's that you need to project them to everybody.
We have to
have
know.
All the thoughts you want. Like if you said to me, hey, this person doesn't care for football, I would go, okay, well, we'll probably can find something else we like.
Enjoy but
if
your they Sunday.
Said, right. Or if someone said, you're going to sit next to someone on a long flight, and that person doesn't care anything about football, I would go, well, we'll have probably other things to discuss.
Yeah, no problem.
But if they said...
They only wanted to discuss.
They don't care about football, and they need the whole plane to know just how little... I'd go, then I don't want to sit next to that fucker. I'll go into the baggage compartment and sit fucking there, because there's a huge difference.
Yep,
the people that don't know, don't care, don't whatever, no qualms, different strokes for different folks. Yeah. Sometimes it's a cultural thing. You grow up playing soccer or something like that. The fact that you have to alert the media, that you have to get on top of a mountain, Mount Pius, and ring this bell.
I don't care about this thing.
That's what makes you a douche, not the thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so 100%. I was...
at the Laugh Factory.
I was going to Laugh Factory, and I was thinking, I should start with like a football joke. And I started going through, football was a big part of my life, and football, 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 and I love football. And then I kind of realized I didn't really have any football jokes and all the amount of football I played and all the amount of football I watch and all the amount I've talked about it.
No jokes.
Just happy memories.
No jokes. No jokes. I couldn't think of anything. And then I thought of a true story, which I have not shared with you guys for a million years on this show. But it's an actual true story, and it made me laugh. And I don't know if it was a joke to this day.
Okay.
It was like the last game of the season, and they let me and Vince DiGiacomo.
That's not real.
Vince DiGiacomo go out and be captains. Vince DiGiacomo was a crazy – he was a big Italian guy with – novelty Will Sasso type calves. Like, you know, those guys just have crazy novelty calves.
Standard bear for large calves.
It was like, it was like he was Italian, but he built like Samoan, you know? He was full Paisan. And he was really slow on the draw. Like, he was just a dumb dude. Sweet, but just a dumb big Paisan.
Okay. He'll be in here later.
Well, look, the last time I saw Vince, he was manning the lumber aisle at the Anawalt Lumber in North Hollywood, where he had been for like 31 years. All now,
right. Does he own the Anawalt?
No.
Okay, well, that's bad.
He's just putting in some FaceTime.
No, what I'm trying to say is, look, these are the guys I grew up with. This is a basic, and it's a bygone era where you would just get a job at 19 or 21 at a lumber yard. And if you walked in there 41 years later, the guy would still be working the lumber yard. Mm. Like, that's his job, you know? And he's a great guy. And I'd go in to Anawalt all the time and I'd see him. But what I'm saying, not the best and the brightest is what I'm saying. And neither was I. So we went out. It was the very last game of the year. And we're standing out midfield. It's back when they just have two captains, like two of you and two of you. It wasn't all this five guys out there. And you just stood across from the other guy who was playing for Chatsworth High or wherever they're playing for. And the ref said, I'm going to flip the coin. And then he pointed at Vince and he said, call it in the air. And the guy flipped the coin up in the air. And Vince yelled out, tails. And the guy caught the coin in his left hand, settled for a minute, opened his hand to reveal it was heads. So he said, North Hollywood has lost the toss. And Vince said, without missing a beat, I thought you were going to go like this and slap
he factored that into his decision.
Right, to the move where you take it, palm it, slap it on the wrist of the other hand, and that's it. Because it isn't clearly discussed what the modality is. It's just call it in the air. And Vince, he didn't let it, you know, he didn't think about it. He just went, I thought you were going to go like that. Like, I factored that into whole thing. To this day, I really don't, he wasn't laughing or anything. I don't know what he was doing at the time. It sounds hysterical to me, but Vince wasn't a comedian. He didn't make many jokes.
Was that rare brilliance by Vince DiGiacomo?
It could have been brilliance. It could have been brilliance. It could have been a brilliant pig in a blanket wrapped in sincerity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, sometimes the most brilliant lines are the ones you kind of mean.
I have a very similar experience. I think I told this story years ago, but I'll tell it again because you'll appreciate this. So you remember in football, at the end of practice, we'd all line up and, you know, have to run. The coach would stand there with the ball and snap the ball. And you had to watch the ball. And if he said, hut! And if someone jumped, you'd have to do a lap before you did a sprint. You know what I mean? The whole team had to, and people are tired and they're gassed, and the coach is right there holding the ball, and we're all lined up staring at the ball. He's like, hut, hut, and we're all, you know, a couple guys jump, and they're like, Jesus Christ, come on, guys, and we do a lap. He does it again. The coach goes, all right, line up again. He holds the ball, and he goes, hut, doesn't move it. And Johnny Heckenberg lurches forward, a fullback, lurches forward, and before the coach can say, everyone take a lap, he goes, motion. Motion! The fullback's in motion! And the coach goes, that's using your head, Heckenberg! That's a fun joke.
Yeah, but he's still,
But again, Johnny was not, I don't know if he was on the honor roll, but what I'm saying is it was that rare moment of brilliance. I was like, Johnny, you beautiful bastard! Motion.
So the audience got a laugh out of it. There was also, I think they were an Italian couple because other comedians had talked about them before I went up, but they literally sat. Now, I've had people sitting in the front row. And I say front row at the Laugh Factory is against the stage,
yeah.
And the stage is 18 inches off the floor. I mean, you're just sitting there. It's like it's almost like you stood on a soapbox and someone just pulled a folding chair to the bottom of your soapbox. That's about the range. At some point, I was in like the midst of my act, and I looked down, and both of them were like texting and not even texting. They had apps open on their phone.
Games.
Like they're playing Tetris and Candy Crush. Like they both of them. I later on sort of surmised that they were literally Italian. Like maybe there was a little language thing that was happening. But they both sat with their knees against the stage, with me standing 2 foot back from the edge of the stage and towering over them, both phones out. And just down on them, just working it.
Hopefully it was a translator app.
If you don't speak the language, stand-up comedy's got to be one of the worst activities you can choose.
So maybe you don't pick the front
row. Maybe you leave. Yeah. I've had so many people who sat in the front row, like literally just against the stage, like having conversations, looking at their phone. Like it is insane. And it was like the good news is it was so close to me. And it was like directly beneath me almost as I stood there that when I gazed out in the crowd, it didn't bother me because it was literally too
under
close to me. But I just thought to myself, what the fuck? Like, who does this? Yeah. Who pulls this? I don't care what the language is. You just pull out your phone and you're doing a spreadsheet. There's a guy up on stage like sweating and gesticulating. And there's both of you and you're just sitting there and it's like iPhone 10, like big screen, you know, lit up, you know, like... You couldn't slide under the radar. And I was like, I noticed it. Like, I looked down and noticed it. And I was like, holy shit. And then I looked up and noticed they put, like, the 2-minute red light on. And I was like, oh, fuck it. Like, I'm not going to go off or get...
You didn't break your resolution. You didn't do any crowd work.
No crowd work. Still no crowd work. So, anyway, there was that. All right, now my Ernest Lee Bigot.
Rachel Epithet.
I like Ernest Lee.
Yeah, and his wife. What's his wife's name?
Rachel Epithet.
That's pretty good.
Somebody said to me that I was yelling about something, and they said...
it doesn't sound like you.
Yeah, they said, did you say racist peanut butter cup or Reese's peanut butter cup?
Oh!
And...
That was yesterday, I think.
And then I thought...
You did say racist.
Racist peanut butter cup. And I was like, I don't know. I'm just yelling. I don't know what I'm saying. But I thought, if Ernest Lee Bigot was making his family recipe for the racist peanut butter cup, it would be... See, I wrote this down. Here's the recipe.
All ears.
Dark chocolate, and then you take marshmallow fluff, and then you keep them as far away from each other as humanly possible.
Ideally separate rooms.
Yeah. Right.
But equal rooms.
That is Ernest Lee Bigot's family recipe for racist peanut butter cup.
He hates the Malamar.
Separate but equal rooms.
I'm working on...
But equal mixing bowls.
I'm working on a s'mores, mores, as in the Black Tribe camping thing as well.
The Othellos.
The marshmallows got me going on the s'mores and the mores, so I'll work on Racist Lee Bigot's family recipe for s'mores as well. Yeah, you got to keep it going. You got to leave a legacy for the kids. All right, let's see.
A black and white cookie.
I just worked. God, you want to talk? I'm telling you, everybody. The most important lesson I've learned in life is chip away, just chip away. I mean, think about how fat I found myself when I was standing outside of the Comedy Store on like Saturday night, and I was standing there with Tom Segura and Chris D'Elia, and we're just like talking, and everyone's like, what are you doing? Why are you doing so much comedy? What's going on with you? And I was saying, oh, my New Year's resolution was to go out and do stand-up. And then they go, oh, good for you. And then I go, oh, no, wait, last year's, like, it's been a year, and now we're into this one. And I realize you're thinking this is this year's New Year's resolution, but the year just zipped by. And I found myself in here with... Dawson today working on the first chapter of the audio book that Lynch and I just wrote, and I thought, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
And the recording of the audio book is a perfect metaphor for everything you don't want to do in life but should be doing. From my wiring, from the dude who just grew up running wild in the streets and jumping off of apartment building roofs into pools and trying to ride wheelies on bikes and play ditch and chuck dirt clods and stuff.
Unicycles off of loading
off
docks.
Of park benches and stuff like that. The notion of sitting and reading seems insane to me. That's my wiring. Right. Every ounce of my fiber wants to go out and run around and go build something or do something or something. So
it's just a waste of my time.
Sitting and reading is not only, you know, most authors find it a little tedious, but most authors have a history of sitting and reading someone else's text or something, and or whatever.
A
they
love
have at
of
least
books.
An academic
right.
background. I have no it's uncomfortable for me, and so the audiobook becomes, oh, here's 300 pages. Now get through it, and it feels like torture, except where we've worked this thing out, which is I'll show up 2 hours early on a this day, and then I'll stay 1 hour late on a that day. And before you know it, you start, like, you know, I'm picking up a handful of papers here. You get through this much, then you get through that much, and then you kind of blink your eyes. And then at some point, Dawson goes, we're about halfway in, and you go, ooh, that didn't even feel that much, because we broke it off into these, you know, bite-sized pieces. Writing the book was the same way. The audiobook will be the same way. Tonight to the Uppity Dock, making the docks the same way. Just break things off into small pieces, do little bits and pieces. Time passes so goddamn quickly, especially as you get a little bit older, that putting that kind of stuff off or kicking it down the road or doing a kind of a cramming version, which, like, what's our hard out? Oh, it's, you know, March 25th. All right, then we'll save it till the
March
last
22nd.
Week. Right.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
The joke's on you, man. Just break it off.
That's good.
You can do almost anything in little bits and pieces.
You can eat an Oldsmobile.
If you... You know, I couldn't run on a treadmill for 3 hours, but I could do it in 20-minute increments. It's that way with sort of everything. So the idea that we were just sort of talking about this book 5 months ago, just talking about it, now I'm reading all the finished product here.
How close are you sticking to the text? Are you doing any asides or things like that?
It's
on
a question
the
for Dawson.
Do you have a conscious... you know, are you trying to stick to it? Are you trying to throw in a little extra? What's your strategy?
I'm not going full riff mode because I'm actually reading the text and kind of proofing it. Dawson's doing more of the grammatical stuff. I'm doing more of the stuff of just did it make sense? Did it flow? Did it whatever? And as I've told people who never will do it, but I always tell them to do it. I used to tell them to do it all the time when they'd hand you ad copy for the radio station. Please read it out.
No.
Don't read out loud. Hand
it
to your secretary.
Read it out loud.
Tell them,
yes.
I'm going to turn my back to you, and I'm going to close my eyes. Just to play it safe. Read it to me, because it never flows right. It's never right. It looked great when you were doing it on your word processor, but if you don't hear it out loud.
You've done this a half dozen times now. The one time I did it, I read the book to myself silently so many times, and then when I went to do the audiobook, I picked up on 6 or 8 things. Like, no, that's not right. Misstated or whatever.
It's literally out loud. You can't just leave it to you to read. Here, proofread this. No, proofread it out loud. Yeah. All right. So there was the Kobe Memorial that I hadn't gotten into, but I...
Oh, the game.
Michelle, yeah. The game. We went... I had driven... August. Oh, I got called August. I said, August, wheels up, 7 a.m. We're driving to Palm Desert. I'm doing a couple of speaking engagements, and then we're going to drive back at, 1:30, and we'll be back at 4, and then I'm just going to take a quick nap, and then I'm going to gather all the kids up, and we'll go to the game. It was a long day because at the beginning I was, you know, up about 6:15 to go to Palm Desert, and by the time it was midnight, I was driving one of Sonny's friends home that was off the beaten path. Mm. Like, that kid was deep Pasadena.
He shouldn't have been allowed to go.
Thing. Mm-hmm. I think there's a parental thing. If you're going to live outside of the pizza delivery zone, you got to come get him. Because this kid was way all out of the zone.
Yep.
So it was like 12:30 at night when I'm driving him way out of the zone. But we all enjoyed the game. I think Usher opened the thing by essentially singing a hymn. Like, it was just a religious hymn, which is nice. And Usher's,
Amazing Grace.
Was it Amazing Grace? It was weird. His version. I don't know the whole song. I know that
you're in the bear line. You could kind of, it was muffled, but you could. Yeah.
He might have been doing some runs.
Yeah, he was doing some runs. But anyway, so that was that. All the cameras going off and everything on and the big jumbotron up there and all the names of the people who were on the helicopter died. And so he got done doing that. And then LeBron spoke, and LeBron, he did a move which we were kind of talking about, that sports ball thing, like a little effed out sort of move. Uh-huh. Like, he did that move where he pulled something out, and he's like, I got a list of what they wanted me to talk about, but damn it, I'm going from the heart. And he's like, throw it away.
Bad boy.
Everyone just started clapping, and I thought, if I tried that shit, everyone would be like, get the fuck out of here.
It's also a nice way to sort of buffer yourself against not speaking so well. I'm not saying LeBron did that, but that's what I would do. Is like, I'd say, oh, I had something, but I'm going off cuff. It's like, that way you're forgiven for any slips. Right. Or any...
Do we have it?
I think we have it. Let's see.
I got something written down. No, they asked me to kind of stay on course or whatever the case may be, but Laker Nation, man, I would be selling y'all short if I read off this shit, so I'm going to go straight from the heart.
There's nothing on that paper. I'm convinced of it.
It's a CVS receipt.
It's a Home Depot receipt. Anyway, I was like, who am I to criticize? But that's it. That's one of those moves.
Oh, that's what I would do.
It's always
going to
work. And especially when you go Lakers Nation, I wouldn't be, you know. So he started off.
Just yelling USA.
Had some nice words. Didn't go real long, but just did a great job. And then sort of went out and played kind of an off game. Like, just did not. I don't know if he had 16 points or something like that, or 20 points. But he was not the LeBron that you were sort of used to. And the Lakers went on to lose.
That's crazy.
Don't you feel like games like that, like after Katrina with the Saints and stuff, like, shouldn't the other team just throw the game? Just give it to them.
I was this close to making like the biggest bet I could on the Lakers, because I was like, there's no way the league's letting them lose this game. You know what I mean? And they got smoked. Jesus.
Well, you know, in the conspiracy theory category, circling back to a number of weeks ago, I think we were talking about Miami and how about they're just going to whiff it so they can get the first round or whatever. And then, like, the last game of the year, like, the Dolphins beat...
They whipped New England.
They whipped New England. So now it's definitely... if there's one team, an 0-whatever team can lose to, it's the perennial all-stars of the idea that they beat them suggests that they're not whiffing. But anyway, LeBron was 9-for-22 and just... He had this great play where he came down, he like broke a dude's ankles. Like, he just held up and pushed the guy, and the guy just went sliding way out of the way, and then he just pulled up and bricked a three. But if he'd nailed that three, they would have been within two, and the place would have erupted. And it was that one shot that kind of summarized LeBron's game, which is comes flying down the court like vintage LeBron. Pulls up and kind of gives the guy like a sweep. The guy literally goes sliding past. And if he drains that, you're back in the game.
The crowd's on
you. It's insane. But he was just a little bit. He was just a little bit off. He goes down the court, sweeps the guy down, pulls up, and
clanks it off the rim, and that was kind of the whole game.
That, a six-point game with 1:14 left, right, that would have been a very different game at that point.
Right, right. Mm. And look, I'm not blaming him. Not everyone's supposed to drain threes, but that was the kind of night it was. Yeah. Like, if he'd drained that, it would have been magical, and that just it didn't fall.
But the kids had fun.
I didn't have as much fun as the kids because of not where I was sitting, but whom I was sitting behind. I was sitting behind I wish it was Kareem, because Kareem is shaved. His head is shaved. I was sitting behind a large man with the biggest afro on the planet, and I literally couldn't see
Questlove?
Half of...
That's Macy Gray. That's where she's been.
That's not even fair.
I'm sitting in my seat right now. I'm not holding... When you guys go to adamcarolla.com, I'm not holding the camera at my belt buckle or anything. I am sitting at my seat. This is the person that was sitting in front of me. The person with the biggest afro. Now, look. There's 19,000 people in there, many people of color. I would challenge you, out of the 19,241 people that were in that stadium, including vendors and assistant
support
coaches,
staff, valets,
if you could find a larger afro, I think you could tie it. I don't think you could beat it. I therefore sat behind, out of 19,000 people, I sat behind the person with the largest afro.
You missed the entire game.
Well, tool tuning.
Now, how do you see anything?
I like this song.
It's a great song.
I shifted one seat over Maxipad. I shot a few different angles of this guy's head.
Wait a second.
Now, the person sitting next to that person had the second biggest hair. This was like...
That's awesome.
It was like if a giant shrub and a sheepdog decided to go to a game together. Like, you gotta understand, half the people in the audience have shaved heads. The other half are wearing ball caps. You know what I mean? There's a lot of Hispanic guys with the short cropped hair.
Sure.
I sat behind two people. Wait, okay, here's what I got. I got
Slash and Macy. It's Slash. I have an extra ticket to the game. You want to go?
Perfect.
I know you're doing your hair right now.
Yes, Cousin It would work in a pinch as well.
Slash and Macy Gray went to a game and sat in front of you.
I sat out of 19,000 people in that audience. I sat behind the number one and number two largest head of hair in the entire... Now, look, maybe it's not a coincidence. Maybe these two were drawn together because of their massive hair.
Well, they were together at a hair salon. Yeah, yeah.
But these were... The guy who was in front of me had mammoth hair, and the chick next to him had huge hair. And the only difference was is the chick next to him was, 5'7", and he was 6'4". So his hair was higher than her hair. These are the two heads I had to be behind. The entire game, there was no getting around it. It's crazy.
That's pretty outstanding.
That's amazing.
The gun, you forget in the picture.
Yeah.
Obscuring the court.
What about the children?
They had a clear shot all the way down. As a matter of fact, I did flirt with the notion a couple of times of saying to Sonny's buddy Jensen, who was sitting, he was all the way against where the stile was, where the hall was, the gate with the tunnel was. So his time was nobody.
Oh,
it was complete. It was like whole court. I could see little bits and pieces of what looked like a basketball game out there. He was like, at some point, I was this close to going, hey, Jensen,
get over here and stand on this
fucking
chair.
Three quarters of this, man. Sorry, brother, but I got the tickets. Like, you're swap it out.
Or which one of you is man enough to sit on my lap?
You got your whole fucking life ahead of you. I got two heads ahead of me.
Many Lakers games.
I got two heads of cabbage ahead of me. There is a shot of Macy Gray.
And Slash! Wow!
Yeah,
Good job, it could have been.
I never did get a look at their face. It could have been Macy Gray and Slash.
That's pretty great.
Now, Maxpad, at some point, the kid next to me, who was, a 3-year-old, he just fell asleep. which of course made it worse because like, kids sleeping. At some point, his dad woke him up in like the fourth quarter and they left.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I slid over one seat.
You got to.
And I think I took a picture of the sight line. Once I slid over one seat, I could see the entire court. You can still see the chick with the big hair on the right, but I could see the whole court at just one seat over or one seat to the right. But my seat, totally obscured. I took a couple pictures of the guy. I wanted to be kind of fair about it. It's like, I'm going to hold the camera up. I'm going to hold it down. But yeah,
oh my.
Brian, looky, that's it. You can show whatever Jesus pictures. Christ. I'm holding the camera up.
I was going to say, that's a high angle.
It's
and all I could sit there the whole time, and they're like, and, you know, the family, you know, they lost their cherished daughter, the beloved wife. I'm like, yeah, but they didn't have it as bad as me.
Yeah, this is real torture.
Then there's this. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, can't see the game.
The helicopter accident was tragic, but it was over in an instant.
At least
you know
they
what
can
I
move
mean?
On, yeah.
Two hours.
At some point, the guy starts waving the towel over his head. He's like, I don't think the guy behind me, I think he's seen too much of this game.
You can still glimpse the Jumbotron.
Yeah. He may have looked up at James Worthy's number hanging from the rafters. I'm going to put an end to that. He held the towel up and started swinging the towel around half the game.
Wow.
I don't know. Do you have to have some sort of follicle awareness? Like, is there a sense of, I have massive hair. Huge hair. Like, if I was sitting behind me, I would be miserable because of how huge my hair is.
Right.
Now, obviously, it's a point of pride, and I wear it this way to work, and I wear it this way to dates, but at events where people sit behind you, Star Wars releases and Lakers games, shouldn't I put on the skull cap,
or the beanie, or
at least get one of those nets that they wear in the fast food places? Like, should I? How about a Lakers hat? You know what I mean? Like, how about just a little? I'm a big guy. I have bigger hair. There's just no way the person behind me can see what's going on up here.
Yeah, this can't be the first time you've ever considered it.
Like, all right, what if someone said, how about you just stand up throughout the entire game? Then that person would probably go, well, that's not really fair to the person behind me if I just stood the whole game.
True.
Right, this is that.
Yep.
This is the whole game of you sitting, but I can't see around your hair. What? Does there any notion about... Hey, look, you're going to a game. There's no better place to pop the cap on.
It would be appropriate. Was there any thought to accidentally, and making air quotes, dropping like, you know, a bucket of beer or water on their head so as to drench the hair?
That would have made for a comfortable evening.
No, but then you apologize. You say, let me buy you whatever, but it's worth your $20.
The only beer hair-related thoughts I had was at some point, there is a cup holder that resides in the back of their chair. Mm-hmm. It's up front. It's not on your chair. Right. It's up front of yours. And as I set my beer down in the cup holder, at a certain point I looked and I could see her hair, not his hair.
Oh, yeah.
Her hair was so big and so long that it was actually cascading over the back of her chair. Mm-hmm. And she was shorter. And as she moved and cheered and stuff, there was dander. You know, like the world's worst Boilermaker, like just crazy dander, you know, Aquanet with an Aquanet
floater.
Yeah.
That sucks.
I don't know. That just it kind of falls under my heading of just dogs on an airplane or spitting gum out on the sidewalk. Just what about other human beings?
Yeah. And this scenario specifically is so Larry David. Because if you were to have said, hey, could you do something? You would have been seen as the biggest asshole on the planet.
It's Kobe's.
Oh, it would have been full earnest.
It's Kobe's memorial. And also, I don't know what they can do. Like, lean back a little or something.
Crouch
like that.
Down.
Yeah. At some point, the fella did kind of lean forward on his knees, like put his elbows on his knees, and that helped. That helped a lot. But essentially, the whole game.
You could see people going up for dunks.
Was me just watching the Jumbotron. And obsessing over the pure luck of sitting behind the two biggest hairs in this entire venue.
That's pretty great.
Just the luck of these two were the two. And both perfectly positioned. He was like a little inside to my right. She was a little off of center left.
No,
there was really no window.
So they came together to block your view perfectly?
Yes.
That's good.
Wow.
I'm glad you had fun.
All right, so there was that, Charlie, what was it?
Pook
or whatever, and then Wiz Khalifa. It was funny because, you know, Wiz Khalifa doesn't do a whole lot in the song itself. They rolled a Steinway out there. Was not an electric piano. Like, they literally pushed a Steinway out, set it down. Charlie got behind it. Did I take video of this?
Yeah, we
have
your video too.
I can't.
Oh yeah, let's definitely use your angle opposed to the good angle.
I can't see. No, I got the person. I got the leader of the Hair Bear Bunch in front of me.
Man, who knew?
Holding the camera over my head now, as long as I get my arm up.
Kid can sing.
Yeah, yeah. And he plays the piano. And Wiz talks. All right. You get the pictures. Very, very moving. And if I wasn't so distracted by the hair, I probably would have shed a tear. It wasn't the hair. It was the random cosmic luck of the draw. Also, I had four tickets. Mm-hmm. Those four tickets were just randomly tossed out. You get there's one for you. I'm not looking to see. And the only thing I did at some point is two of the kids were like, I said, why don't you swap out with Sonny? Sonny will sit next to me. And that was about it. But I was just randomly plopped down behind Phil Spector had the wall of sound. I had the wall of hair.
Yeah.
It was a wall of hair. It was not only the biggest head and the biggest person in front of me, it was the second biggest next to him. And it just created a topiary of vision obstruction.
Well,
painful.
No.
Painful. And also, I was looking around at all the other guys with the caps and the shaved head and the buzz cuts and everything. It was like, nothing. All right.
You're the real victim.
I am.
Thanks a lot, Norm.
So we'll take a quick break. Somebody's calling from Iowa. It's got some Iowa news. We'll
keep counting.
That.
Stressful.
Do that right after this.
The Corolla Drinks Wine Club has arrived. We're bringing you all the bottles you can drink and more perks than you know what to do with. For those who just want to dip their toes into the wine club, our 3 and 6 pack clubs will get you 3 shipments a year, 10% off all wine orders, and a DVD of the long-awaited Uppity, plus more and more goodies throughout the year. For those who want to dive in head first, our Case Club will get you 3 shipments a year, 10% off all wine orders, a DVD of Uppity, and 2 tickets to the Corolla Family Barbecue, featuring the entire ACS family, a lineup of comedians, all the food and booze you can consume, a photo with Adam, Bald, and Gina in the ACS studio, and a private concert from The Offspring. But wait, there's more. For renewing Case Club members only, you'll get a private tequila and cigar tasting with the unholy trinity of Adam, Drew, and Garrigus before the barbecue even begins. For those who want to attend the party of the year without having delicious booze sent to your door 3 times a year, tickets are available for sale at CorollaDrinks.com. So prep your livers. The Corolla Drinks Wine Club is back. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Why'd you do it, Adam? Why'd you do it? You had to pick the Niners to win the Super Bowl. The Corolla curse gets kicked in once again.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Yeah, I did. When they were up 20-10 and it was 3rd and 15 with 7 minutes left, I was feeling pretty good about my bet.
Same.
I was feeling pretty good. It was like, when Atlanta was up by 25 points to the Patriots, and I just took the money line. I'll take Atlanta to win the game. I'm not taking any points. I was like, they're up by 25 points. Yeah. The game's over.
Like, rest easy.
Just go count my money now. Nope. All right, let's talk to...
Speaking of count my money now, I had money in Pete Buttigieg to win Iowa. So.
Oh, you might be okay,
let's see what happens. Yeah.
Barry, 40, from Iowa.
Ace, get it on, man.
What's going on, man?
Well, I just wanted to call and just, kind of apologize on behalf of the state of Iowa. It's not... We're garnering some pretty awful headlines right now. And it's not all of us here. It's just some of us. I don't want to throw a political party under the bus, but
can I say this about
whose caucus is it, Barry?
as a West Coaster, Iowa and the good name of Iowa being tarnished and besmirched. This sounds to me like, hey, remember that fat chick? Yeah, she's put on more weight. That's kind of what it sounds like to me. I'm a snob though, from L.A.
Ironically, Ace, after listening to you and James Carville yesterday, the snobbery, we're used to it. Used to it here.
They're a flyover state, after all.
The great unwashed.
We are a flyover state, but we did kick the shit out of USC in the holiday.
Burned.
That's what we want to be known for, really. So I was at
the Orange Bowl in 02.
There was an app. That misfired, or what happened?
Well, this made me think of you, Adam.
Not an app, but a...
Well, this was you, what we were talking yesterday, when you're like, I don't want the best technology of 2020. I want the best technology worked out from 2008. And that's exactly what this is. They tried this brand new thing, this app. They couldn't get it to work. And it's, what are we at, Barry? 16 hours later and the app still doesn't work?
I don't know. I'm bored. I quit paying attention a while ago and I'm here in the thick of it. But this is a system that used to work. They built a Rube Goldberg machine that, how is it not going to let them down? So, I don't know.
Can we just get back to paper ballots or tabs?
They actually have paper. They have a record of all this. And so that's why,
but
the
idea
longer it takes them to get this stuff sorted out, the more conspiracy theories are going to be.
Caucusing is pretty weird, though. A bit outdated. I mean, why not do it? I know there's other states that do caucuses. Why not do it like everyone else does it? You know what I mean? Why not just vote?
I don't know.
I'm with you. But I think if you participate in one, you kind of start to see the value of it because it's completely and totally transparent. There is no way to hide. How you're voting.
Well, when are they going to have this one settled? Where are we at now?
They said later today.
And then
supposedly later today.
See, this kind of, I think, unfortunately, this kind of stuff hurts. Like, let the government handle Medicare for all or whatever. Handle it. It's like,
careful what you ask for.
There may be some screw ups. Yeah. Maybe they don't roll it out that well. Yeah. All right, Barry. God bless you in Iowa. And
thanks, man. Just so everybody knows, we're not all morons.
No. I like that.
Joke's on you, Barry, about the Holiday Bowl. I bet on Iowa.
Oh, you bet on Iowa.
Goddamn right.
I had a thought. Other people must have thought about this, but I was like hearing about this screw up and caucus and who's gonna. And now I don't know. Bernie's leading the charge, and then the Democrats are freaked out that Bernie's up front because they don't think he's electable, so they're gonna turn and burn like they did before.
Turning Bernie.
Yeah, they're just gonna start seeing more stories on CNN about him being, Me Too'd and stuff. Oh, by the way, here's how you know. It's like Elizabeth Warren says 22 years ago, he said whatever when they were at dinner. Like, really, that's a story? Or you're trying to knock the guy down. Anyway, I started thinking about that, Bernie, caucus, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, I thought, Trump could get he could get elected for a second term.
And then
I thought about, wait a minute. Donald Trump Jr., he's out on the path.
Yeah.
He's not saying anything, but he's doing a lot to keep the train running.
How so?
He's writing books. He's like he's doing all the stumping and all the speeches and everything.
He's a surrogate.
There is a version of Trump that goes two terms, senior, two terms junior. Like, there is a 16-year version of
rain.
This.
Rain of terror.
I was laying in bed last night, and I was like, oh, no, could that... And then it's like, well, Bush did it.
That's right.
And junior is step for step, on point, talking the same thing, popping
to the same,
up everywhere. And if the economy goes good and there's no, you know, and Korea doesn't nuke us or whatever, you go, the notion of like, well, 8 years of Trump is the max. No, no. 16 is the very max of Trump.
Well, I think Ivanka is even more of a viable candidate down the road.
She
at least has crossover people. There's people that hate Donald Trump Jr.
She is super charismatic, super smart, very easy on the eyes, and very capable, as I learned from working with her a little bit on Celebrity Apprentice. But I don't think she's been out there, and she can do whatever she wants, and who knows, maybe, you know, Michelle Obama will go against Ivanka Trump. But as I picture it, and as I read some of Junior's book, and I interviewed Junior, I realized, oh no, he's laying the groundwork.
Interesting.
That the soil is being tilled. No one is talking about it that much because it's like everyone's fretting over the second term of Trump, but there could be a third and a fourth term of Trump.
That's right.
Wow.
And then the Kushner era begins.
And if Senior
Little Baron,
if Donald is alive throughout that, then he's just going to be calling the shots or whatever. Everyone's going to be checking. He's going to check with them anyway.
And, you know, it's funny that people keep saying Bernie's not electable. I'm not even a Bernie bro, but it's like he seemed electable last time, which is why there was a huge smear campaign. Everybody still loves him. What is this? He's not electable rhetoric. He seems pretty electable on my television, on my radio.
I don't know.
God.
Well, I mean, the Democratic Party, the people that are the... not down on the factory floor, but up in the booth, up in the corner offices, are like older school people. And those older school people, you wouldn't recognize the ones on the floor versus the older school people. Like, if you go back just a few years and hear what they're talking about border security and all their thoughts about immigration or gay marriage or anything, it sounds like a Republican is talking. Like, they're older school. Now, they have some flexibility, but I think they think the country doesn't have enough flexibility to go full Bernie. Like, maybe you could get to Bernie the next one or the one after or something
Bernie
like that. Bernie won't
be
or some version.
It might not last this for
you. No, I mean, by the time AOC gets old, AOC's 29 or 30 or something, what are you going to be, 36 or
35.
By the time you get to 30, by the time AOC gets to that age, then the country may be ready for that. I think they think we're not ready for, we're ready for Biden, but we're not ready for him, and that's going to give Trump four more years. Yes.
I was just going to say this, have this exact conversation with Christy the other day, and I, again, I'm a dumb. I don't know this much about politics, but like, the Republicans have their 50 million who are going to vote for Trump, and the Democrats have their 50 million who are going to vote for their candidate. And you have this, you know, small few million in the middle that's going to really decide the election. And are you going to convince those few million people to vote for an admitted and proud socialist? And that's just, you know, that's a tough putt for the average American.
Yeah.
And that's also something that the Republicans can use against him. Like, he's a socialist. Whether or not you think that's good or bad, Trump, that's just a talking point.
Trump already did in that interview, that great interview before the Super Bowl, when they're just running down the list of candidates and he's just going full, like, high school nickname. And he's like, and socialist, I mean, didn't Bernie get married in Moscow? Don't get me wrong. Moscow's a great, wonderful, beautiful place. But didn't he get married there?
I mean, that's a tough hill to climb if you're trying to, you know, beat the incumbent.
Yeah.
Hey, you know one thing? Yeah, go ahead.
I was trying to think of a Georgia joke where Trump said he didn't go to Atlanta. He was in Russia. Okay. You know, based
Georgia.
On the,
that's real good.
That based on the
Georgia
Kansas
country, kind of thing. That's funny.
I would have had to write it down.
I would have to work
that Georgia one out.
You know, that, like Brian said, you have to be 35. And there's this list of, like, you know, grandfathered in rules. You know, in this day and age with the very progressive climate, don't you think it's weird that nobody has any thoughts about how you have to have been born in this country to run for president?
Oh, I don't think you're ever going to change that.
But isn't it weird that there aren't more people talking about that?
Well, Obama was born in Kenya.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. So well, I guess we've already
first
just jumped that hurdle.
I think what we could do is we could loosen that up into spirit of the rule, you know, because once in a while they'll go like, Ted Cruz was born in Canada or something, or his mom was born in Canada. Like, that stuff where you're just a half a thing removed, I don't really care.
What about Schwarzenegger? Everybody loves him.
If you come here as a young person and you've lived here, I would do more of a, I would do maybe less of a born here and more of a, you need 25 years in, or some version of that.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to need you to, sing the dreidel song or something without butchering it or something. Either way, yes,
it's
I can
get you elected.
I don't want the Russian. Think of that movie, the Marathon Man.
The Manchurian.
I don't want the Manchurian candidate coming over here from Ukraine and winning an election.
All coached up.
But if you got pictures of you in high school in Nebraska, that's fine. Your parents came over here when you were 11.
Cut through a bad Photoshop of you waving a Cornhuskers flag.
I have a funny clip to play you guys from Palm Desert in a second. First, I'll tell you about ZipRecruiter. Hiring's a hard process. Cafe Alturas COO Dylan Moskowitz saw how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. So he switched to ZipRecruiter, saw an immediate difference. You can too. At ZipRecruiter.com/Adam. ZipRecruiter finds candidates for you, and they find them fast. They invite them to apply to your job. After posting on ZipRecruiter, Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. It is the best. It's ZipRecruiter, right, Dawson?
See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Adam. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ADAM, ZipRecruiter.com/Adam. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right, let's see. I'll play you a clip. It just made me laugh, but it also talks about a subject that we've talked about before, which is everyone just out to smear everyone. And I was at Rancho Mirage. I was with James Carville.
So was this thing?
I don't know. I don't really know what stuff is. I just show up, do what I like. They point me in a direction.
It was a Proud Boys rally.
I just do it. Yeah,
he didn't know.
It was the Rancho Mirage Writers Festival. They had a lot of different authors just coming in doing panels discussions.
And at some point, Michael Douglas.
So Adam, what's your process for writing?
You give me money, I go to Rancho Mirage, that's
and I yell at Mike Lynch to start writing.
No, but you know. One minute I'm talking to a conservative, the next interviewing a conservative, the next minute I'm interviewing a liberal, and I'm like, I'm there to talk and learn and eat for free. And there's
look at that.
There's a picture.
That's a trio.
Of Dennis Prager, me, and Michael Douglas, who's a lot smaller than you would think, although Dennis is big and I'm big.
You're big Dennis.
But also very satisfying to essentially know that Michael Douglas has no idea who I am.
Yeah.
I mean, that was abundantly clear. Was it not, Max Zapata?
Yeah, August was introducing you.
Mike bum-rushed him. He's like, hey, you know Adam Carolla. And you can see him go like,
hey, buddy.
And now he saw me walking to him, and he did a I know the celebrity. Oh, yeah, okay, you. But you kind of have to say that.
He did just come out of the bathroom. He's been a little disoriented.
Right, so Mike bum-rushed Michael Douglas. And I don't know if Michael Douglas is an author, but evidently he is.
Mm.
So he was in there speaking. Anyway, I was up there later. I did Carville early, and then later I did Prager. And Prager told a story, and I made a joke. So I like the story, and I like the joke, and it's under 2 minutes. So why not play it for you?
I'll give you another example. Years ago, I wrote a column, and I mentioned, how many of you attended my happiness talk? Okay, perfect. So you heard me mention this, in fact. The so what idea on, if a woman loves her husband, so what? You know, you're not in the mood. So on occasion, say, so what? Hi, honey. Let's get together. That's fine. So I wrote a two-part, you could see it, it's still up on the internet. I wrote a two-part column, when a woman is not in the mood, when a wife is not in the mood. That's what it's titled. So you could agree with me, disagree with me, fine. But the biggest left-wing site, MoveOn.org, then published, and so did the Huffington Post, for that matter. They both published the thing, Dennis Prager Advocates Marital Rape. When my whole thesis was, if your husband is a wonderful man and you love him and you want to have a wonderful marriage, then on occasion, if you're not in the mood, it's still worth doing.
I wrote a column some years ago called When a Stranger Falls Asleep Next to You on a Bus. And it had many of the same elements. I was attacked.
Yeah, I don't know why. That is really mangling.
The broader strokes of Dennis's argument were very much alive in my article, and yet I was attacked.
I can't understand why. And now that we do things together, that makes perfect sense to
them.
That's
right.
Yes, exactly.
And painted with the same brush getting painted
yes,
with.
Yes, exactly.
I just love his ability to laugh.
Oh, yeah.
I also like the idea that he advocated for marital rape. Okay. Yeah. Now, again, if you read that article and that's what you get from it, you're not really a journalist.
Yeah, that may say more about you.
But I don't think that's what you get from it. Mm-hmm. I just think you don't like this guy, which is fine. Oh, Jezebel called him a marital rape apologist.
We'll put that on a business card.
That's nice.
But here's the whole thing. If you're writing for Jezebel or wherever you're writing for, you don't like this person, Dennis Prager. That's fine. Now you have to go find things that are accurate, that are negative, right, to say about him. But you're not allowed to just take straight stuff. Like when I was like, Young Turks, when those fucking idiots were yelling about me talking about school lunches, I was saying, it's not about the money. I don't care about the money. I care about you making lunch or breakfast for your own child and what the implications are of me paying for it. I'm not interested in the 81 cents a kid it costs. And then the chick gets on and she's like, Adam's too cheap to pay for kids. It's like, boy, do you guys not do your homework, or do you ignore your homework? Like, is it, you're not doing your due diligence, but you are watching, you are listening, so you just heard me say it three times, it's not about the money. How do you lead with, he's too cheap?
Three times, fool!
I laid it out. So, obviously, this suggests to me there's an angle, and that angle's a negative angle. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's nothing here, because I took the fuse or the triggering mechanism out of this bomb by prefacing my statement with, it's not about the money. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that. And Prager's,
Adam Carolla says, it all about money.
Prager's like, hey, first he says, if your husband's good, like if he's a good man, like if you love him, if he's an asshole, fuck it. But like if he's a good dude, and then he says, on occasion, if you're not in the mood, yeah, give him some loving.
Valentine's Day.
It makes a good
birthday
anniversary.
Helps for helps the relationship. It's a very sensible thing to say. Now, advocating for marital rape is probably not what he was doing, but
and I would imagine that goes both ways. If the lady's a little more amorous and dude's tired after a long day, what does it hurt to get together?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of me in that position. I can tell you, if you're struggling and trying to have kids, there is a fair amount of that going on. You know,
there's it feels like homework.
Yeah.
Fun homework, but homework.
I do not understand that. I've had friends in that position. I've heard people talk about it. How does one even get themselves to a place where they can have sex when it's like, all right, it's time. Come over here. Like, that sounds not so fun.
Did you say something, Gina?
Yeah, guys are pretty good at that. But I'm saying,
Pavlovian in that respect.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody would. I don't think anyone would
like if you swap the roles of the woman was feeling a little amorous and the guy was feeling a little tired, I don't think anyone would object to going, eh, well, so what's wrong with the guy? Just
throw a bone.
Yeah, just
literally
carve out 12 minutes and
12 minutes? What are you going, four times?
And just get it done. So if it works that way, it works the other. All right, let's, I got hot veggie sandwich talk and some Charlize Theron talk.
Ooh.
My favorite African American actress.
And
that's right.
That's true. And and the Menendez brothers talk as well right after this.